What were we saying about the binoculars?
Oh, that they just define
field. What was it called?
Depth
of field.
Yeah, just very, very narrow. I mean, that's what makes pictures pop, you know, is when you have foreground and background kind of misty or, you know, fuzzy, and the object
really does it.
In focus. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that in a weird, just kind of fun, like, if this was the edge of my experience, how would you know, like, you know what I mean? It, visually, this is a total visual, like, absurdity, but
right.
You know what I mean? Like, you, if this was just all coming this way in some way, then it's, like, clear that it's not necessarily a body that you're attached. It's only when you start sort of looking, you know, around and kind of in a dimensional thing, sort of put it together in a weird...
Yeah, that's what Douglas Harding was all about.
That guy.
I mean, he was about a lot more than that. You know,
right.
He was a multivalent character, but...
Can't see your face.
Yeah. I mean, this is a... right? This is kind of like a scuba mask shape.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a stereophonic if you have two working eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like a, you know, oval. Scuba oval. And, well, all fields that are occurring, you know, in your sensory sensitivity are unparsed. There's no, you can't find lines within the visual field or the auditory field or the tactile or the smell or the taste. And even in any given field, you can't find any lines. Your depth of field, or the nuance of attenuation, and attenuation is not just the volume or the intensity, but it also includes the quality of attention, right, that's being given, though usually involuntarily, to all that's appearing within the entirety of your sensory field, right? And while there's the, you could say, the more physical elements of five senses and the plenums and apertures that we refer to as the body, let's say the portals through which data pours in, your eye is a portal, right? I mean, eyes are beautiful when you look at them, but they can also be really freaky because it's just a camera lens,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we look at each other with, you know, their facial recognition and eye recognition and, you know, the Fibonacci beauty that every face has, right? The sacred geometric beauty that every face has. And sometimes you can look at eyes and go, dude, like, you know, it's zombie-like, because they're just lenses, you know? I mean, is there life in them? I mean, what are they doing? I mean, do they point out or light coming in? And you can say the same is true for, you know, all of these sensory plenums. So there's an unmanageable magnificence of data input stimulating every single one of your sensory plenums at the same so-called moment. And then there's the less material, which is, right, the mood, the texture, the feeling. Hi, welcome. Have some pizza.
Howdy.
Howdy. Then there's the more subtle, which is how you're receiving your experience and what's going on psychiatrically or emotionally or in the pH in the blood, the mood, right? The prevailing planet of the day. You know, where's the moon in its phase, right?
Well, is this is all sort of a whole that you're talking about, though.
Sure.
This is the subjective nature, yes?
Well, not really, no. I mean, by doing all of these lists, we're really looking at objects.
We're still an object.
Absolutely, yeah, sure, yeah. Once you go from, let's say, the sense apparati, this is Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
There's tea and stuff over there, too.
Oh, awesome.
Maybe you already know that.
Once you go from the, let's call it the physicality of the so-called five senses, the stimulus, the plenum, and the, call it the refraction that happens in what we call brain, even though that's completely bananas, right?
Which so wired in such a way that was caused, if you want to go there, from nature and your genes and all that to behavior. I mean, to things you've experienced. Well,
yeah, you're not going to find any meaningful right lines in the sand or demarcations right. between the gross physical, the subtle physical, the neuronal capacity for holographic projection. I mean, sound, which is vibration traveling through air, right? Right? It's a vibration in air, is stimulating the eardrum. And the eardrum has the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup, three minutely crafted bones, which create a tympanum, right? So that the eardrum as a mechanism is actually like a drum skin. It's an operating sensitized tympanum. And that, right, vibratory physicality through the optic nerve into the master holographic, right, imagining machine is sound. But it's even subtler than that, right? So, at what level of granularity do you go to say, oh, this is sound, or this is light, this is touch, this is taste, this is smell? We can see the neurologists and the physiologists, the microbiologists can take apart the structure of the human body and look as right minutely as possible at the physical structure of the sense plenums, the cilia in the nostril, right? The fuzz and the weirditudes, I mean, the compactness of what are these called? Nerve endings in the tips of the fingers, which are remarkably compact and are highly concentrated here in the tips of the fingers than they are elsewhere in the body. So, you know, when you study anatomy and physiology or, you know, bodywork styles, and you get good training, you become alerted to the remarkable nature of how sensitive these are for pressure and heat and temperature. I mean, your fingers, your hands are, you know, they're auric. So you can place your hand near or on someone and just penetrate right through to feel deeper waves in the tissue, in the fluid, in the cranial rhythm, in the fascia, in the bone. I mean, you're that sensitive. It's just that you're not necessarily trained to negotiate what's being felt and then, you know, create a language. Like an acupuncturist, right, a skilled Vedic or whatever, tantric acupuncturist. The other guys are the
Chinese medicine?
Yeah, I was thinking that word. The Chinese is called what? What's the word?
TCM. That's what they use for medical diagnostics.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's.
Well, there's the Asian and the Indian, right?
Yeah.
Right.
You can do pulse, tongue.
Yeah, yeah. So,
that's
yes.
Weird and
so, right. Irises, feet, pulse, tongue, right? I mean, the sensitivity of a trained acupuncture diagnostician is incredible. Mm-hmm. And the poetry that they can use to come up with what might be imbalanced mm-hmm. in your system harkens to, you know, weather and nature patterns.
Sure.
They don't use the same language that, you know, an anesthesiologist, right, does, or a Western-trained diagnostician. They use humors and poetry of, you know, of the five element.
And meridians, which is, like, cool just to see the, it's just that fractal, you know, they're the same as our latitude and longitude, and it's this, it's just a...
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, there's a huge portion of the population that poo-poos all of that. But then they will happily accept that a blind person can read Braille. And as they're reading Braille, the words are just going through.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're not feeling that. It's like, hey, and that's, you know.
That's right. This is, it's a holographic,
right? So we're talking about the same sort of thing.
Yes.
It's a direct transfer. I mean, it takes a lot of practice.
Yes.
Still in teaching and stuff like that.
Yes. So you know, as a person, as a body, even though those are aftermarket identifications, are this, you know, spontaneous, impersonally arising, non-dual, as an instantaneous field of sensitivity. Just like someone is trained to read Braille and it flows as smoothly as possible, we're doing this nonstop with all the sense plenums and the ethers of thinking and emotive association and universe creation and placing ourselves in space-time with, you know, one or a thousand different mood sets or priorities.
Well, I love that now they can do that with data. In they have all these crazy projection fields and holographic where you get in a little dome with a giant bridge that's gigantic, and they plug all the data in that they've collected about a certain organ or whatever, uh-huh. You know, and then you can basically just sit in the experience of a heart.
Nice.
Or whatever. You could do astrology. They could do anything, you know, however much data they have. But all they're doing is plugging the data in and bam.
And amplifying it or magnifying it somehow. So you're sitting in an environment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're just using regular old, you know.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's some, I don't know the technology. It's some cross between computer and technology.
Sounds like a holodeck.
3-day, it is.
Yeah, right. It's a working holodeck. What fun.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
Very cool.
So you feel like you're looking at from inside a heart?
Yeah, you can explore inside veins and after they collect the data and plug it in.
Oh, got it. Okay.
It's like they're using it for mostly, you know, science.
Once you can do 3D modeling, then you can project the holographic environment into a larger screen, let's say. Yeah. So instead of having to open a body up and peer, you know, with your eyes or with whatever, now,
right?
Yeah, they've mapped it with like EKGs and all kinds of things, and they've got enough data that now they can.
Yeah.
So it's just like us kind of doing the backwards of what's going on all the time. It's
funny. Well, that recent NASA image of the, is it the Andromeda galaxy? Highly pixelated. Have you seen this at all? It's really fun. Look it up. I mean, NASA put together the largest ever assembled image of, in this case.
Oh,
you know,
is it on the one that's really big? It's really big, but if you walk up to it, it zooms in or something.
Well, you can, as you're navigating with the image, you can fade out and see the galaxy and its, you know, spiral beauty, or you can drill in and look at the grain of the star field.
It's on the NASA website.
I saw it on your Facebook page. I'm like, wait a minute. That's
weird.
I mean, you can get lost in it. Just absolutely lost in it. Yeah. And to begin to appreciate the level of granularity that they've captured, you know, in this interactive image, the size and the space and the breadth and the light years that you're staring at from the comfort of your desk chair is like, no. You know, it just is not refrigerable. Yeah. So, aperture or depth of field is a good metaphor for a muggle's journey into awake. Because here we are being presented, not just presented from outside, but the presentation of you is also, right, the magnificent expression of you. It's not like you're individuated and shit's coming at you. You're that field, right? You're not so individuated that as a bioluminescent grouping of fascination, are you other than this? So all of this is pouring at you, but all of this is pouring as you. And, you know, what, in you, before you, after you, and even the sense of a mind or a thought structure or a discursive, you know, habit, ruminating discursive habit of reflection is still, right, in you, as you, not apart from this or you. But we relate to thinking from the vantage point of a willful individual.
It's funny because it's like very obvious if you take that, like the heart and the data, it's not like you can't, how could you separate them? What, you don't have the heart projection without the data, and you don't have, neither one is.
Yes. In physics, what's the principle that you can know, you can know the speed but not the position, or you can know the position but not the speed?
Oh yeah, you can never get both pinpointed.
That's right. Right. So we think that we're capable of observing phenomena macroscopically, microscopically, extraterrestrially, et cetera, as if we've actually are witnessing an object.
We witness like one little aspect and then another and then tie that, weave them together. That's funny.
Right. So,
like,
yes. So
we've experienced time and one and this and the other, and we've never done them both together, but we'll just put it together and ta-da.
You know how to drive to the Barn Theater.
It's like making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You wouldn't really think much about it.
And how much time you need to get something at Starbucks, pick up your popcorn and hit the theater just in time for the previews to be done. Right. You can do that. It's like, I don't know how, but it's like, whoa. But with all of the magical powers that we possess for making appointments, keeping appointments, being, you know, on time for appointments, and even having a satisfactory appointment, whether it's professional or some kind of liaison, is unbelievable, because we're operating, again, you know, nonstop without any boundary field or demarcation, as the very beatitude which we think we're experiencing. So depth of field from the point of view of an egoic enterprise tends to be kind of hyper inflexible, narrow, impersonally selective, though ego takes responsibility for presumed selection, right? Presumed choice, presumed perception, presumed commentary on that perception, which is objective and real. Then if there are feelings associated with the most minute of sensory tickles, it could be envy, it could be, what do I have to put in my planner? It could be something to avoid, something to tell someone about, a difficult situation to discharge from, a seduction of some kind, a manipulation of some kind, a justification, an explanation, right? And all of this content of mind that makes it look like I am not a puppet is occurring so quickly, so spontaneously and impersonally, that the assignment or the adhesion that is imposed on all of these magical powers for sure makes it look like you're you. And you got this.
It's a very rich data set.
The data set is, I mean, rich beyond rich. Rich beyond rich.
Quantum beyond quantum. Something.
Well, the you got this doesn't last for long,
no. Yes, that's true. But let's look at a lifetime full of appointments and disappointments. And how many times we've been pointed out to us that we don't got squats. How long does it take for us to rebound into I got this? Yeah. We're not that bright. Right?
We never
learn.
It's like the training. Yeah. Really,
yeah. No, we can get bounced around like Mr. Bill, you know? Mr. Bill! Oh! And we'll pop right back and go at it again with the full force of our egoic enterprise, our egoic entitlement, and our egoic certainty. And at the same time, heaping upon ourselves a giant inventory of disappointment and lamentation.
We won't be fooled again.
Yeah, and the insistence, whether you're a rock star or not, we won't be fooled again. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that the way nature is programs us, and I'm at the age where I'm seeing it, and I'm sure several of them, some of us are, is, you know, your vision goes, your hearing goes, you know, all these things that you rely on. Are they? Oh.
Paleo diet.
Paleo diet.
I mean, it's
mine are declining at an early age, like, so don't do what I'm doing.
It's like, you don't got this, and, you know, maybe you should rely on something else, or maybe you should let go of the notion that you have it all. I had a very, I have reading glasses. I don't need, you know, for distance.
I have a whole new head I put on for reading. Yeah, really. Glasses don't work anymore. I have to switch heads.
But I mean, I remember like walking, forgetting to take them off, or something, walking down the steps. And if you have reading glasses and you're trying to walk, it's just what you say about, like, you know, this focus of, like, everything else around you is just, like, it's so disconcerting until you take them off and go, what the heck did I have these on? But it's just, you know, it's just a very different experience when you've got a, you know, focused vision and everything around you is like out of focus. I don't know.
Processing the immediacy and intimacy of present experience through thought waves creates a hypnagogic and hallucinatory interpretation.
Through fixed thought waves, through, not necessarily just through thought waves.
Well, through the association of reference.
Yeah, you can almost say it's a change. It's a phase change. It's an interpretation.
Yes, this is what the, you could say, the constructive myopia of yogic endeavor encourages you to play with or see or experiment with is how, or not even how, because no one knows or could possibly articulate how. There is no how. So I think the better word to use is that you become acquainted with the subtle signatures of the nuanced nature of consciousness. No one ever has ever answered how, and nobody will or can. So it's not how, it's... So being with whatever that suggests, the data field or the incomprehensibility of your present experience, and relieve yourself, and oddly, you can. It's not, don't be waiting around to be enlightened by virtue of some error or some peacock feather. That's bullshit. You have all of the intelligence at your disposal to interface or engage with the textural nature of present experience and simply relax from, not refuse, not be heavy-handed, but completely relax from the reflex to process this through thought, through story.
You know, it seems to me that thought is what causes the, going way back to the binocular analogy and the depth of field thing, thought is what causes this narrow depth of field. And then we can just like...
No. No, it's not. It doesn't.
X plus Y equals Z.
It doesn't, yeah.
Well, it's somewhere in there.
Well, this is the invitation. You can appreciate through, let's say, hanging out together and using vocabulary as carefully as we possibly can, which is not so great, but still.
We're trying.
Yeah. And so we can use words to evoke... let's just call it, you know, subtle agreement about what these words are referring to. Five senses and depth of field, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? They're evocative only. They're not really what's true. But they're evocative. They're suggestive. We can conjure, an environment. We can conjure a way of feeling. if we use the vocabulary in a certain manner, in a non-frivolous manner, right?
If our interest is there and interested in playing with it and available.
Yes.
To it or something.
So when you look at depth of field, you will not find a culprit. You will not find, what was that Kevin Spacey movie that he was in the lineup?
The usual.
You will not find any usual suspects.
When you were talking about Sensorium.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but think that it seems to me like a piece of that Sensorium is not just physical, it's the thought structures that come through.
Absolutely, yes.
Like the thought structures are kind of like the weather that blows through your Sensorium.
Sure.
Like
right.
The distant, you know, the hum of the whatever it is humming back there, and the lights, they can be either excruciating if you're just like, I can't stand this for another minute.
Yep.
And this light is just too bright, somebody's got to turn it. Or it can just be, it really informs your experience, like the physical experience.
You are more a weather system than a fixity.
For sure.
An absolutely turbulent.
More like a solar system.
Weather system. Or a solar system. Or a spiral galaxy.
Galaxy.
Yeah.
Something big.
Yeah. All of these metaphors fly because the entirety of what's expressed, is expressed through what appears to be repetitive fractalization. And, you know, I'm not going to call them laws of physics because those are broken every day, all the time, you know, by bizarre observations, whether microscopically or macroscopically. You know, laws of physics, just goodbye, forget it. But that's cool. Even at a more superficial level, right, the rotating nature of spiral galaxies or clusters or the helix of, you know, DNA strands or what's happening in your subtle and gross humors, biomolecularly, right? Observations can be made about the bizarre digital and analog interfaces of how a cell maintains its own, right, integrity as a system. Yeah. Well, you can get a feel for it. It's sigillic. Hey.
Well, you can trip into action.
Have pizza, have tea.
No, have pizza.
All right. No. What didn't you understand about have pizza?
Yeah. Don't step out of line.
Nobody here is okay. Don't start that shit with us. Yeah, really. Rules. Yeah. So to get a sense of the impersonal cacophony of you as a really non-opinionated weather system. Yeah. Feel yourself, whatever that implies, through whatever magical means you have at your disposal, feel yourself as a non-opinionated weather system.
Right.
Wow.
It turns into curiosity instead of repulsion or grasping. It's just curiosity that opens.
It has a different, it's a different signature.
Yep.
Yeah. When we look through, let's call it the eyes of, you know, egoic, right, reference making, the depth of field appears a certain way to us, as us, in us, through us. Yep. As that depth of field changes, and this is not just involuntary. I mean, everything is involuntary. Everything is being broadcast. But that doesn't mean that everything is involuntary or being broadcast. Right? Nothing's true at the expense of its opposite. So even though this is clearly improvisational, impersonal, spontaneous, has no duration, don't make any effort, give up any hope of success, work your ass off. You know? Fuck you. Why be so lazy? And those are not at odds. Those are not mutually exclusive. They're just not. Because you are appearing in you. Yes? Did you lift a finger to appear in you? No. But that you are aware with whatever aperture you've got at your disposal, that you are aware that you are appearing in you is a magnificent observation. Because you appearing in you is not deranged by opinion, is not deranged by conclusion, is not deranged by becoming. You appearing in you is true. Which might suggest that there is malleability, elasticity, response, reply to how you appear as you, in you. You're not just a dumb fuck pacifist. This is open. It's expressive. It's scintillating. So why not feel yourself appearing in you without argument, without becoming, without regret, without anything to repair? Oh my God. Without anything to repair. Fuck that. Fuck me. Wow. And not be harnessed by or banished to a world of time. Here you go. Ta-da! That was easy. Ta-da! You are you. You are appearing in you. As you, or even transcendent of what you took yourself to be. And here it is.
Kind of like the free of the judgment of it being good or bad, too. Or like by a standard of good and bad.
Everything is flatlined. Yeah. Everything is flatlined. So even the confidence that we might place in that a moment ago I was a judgmental asshole, and most of the judgment was being aimed where? Right? At me. Sure. Except for those luscious moments where I can gossip about and blame everybody else. Those are good. But, you know, absent that, most of the disappointment, right? Most of the psychiatric disappointment, most of the psychiatric or emotional malnourishment is you pointing, right? Judgment, presumption at yourself.
The presumptions.
Yeah. And that's I'm not saying whether it's a narrower or wider or higher or lower, but it's a kind of a depth of field. Right? Yeah. So in order to point either outwardly or inwardly, take a position, define, find something to agree with or disagree with. In order to do that, you have to be manufacturing that. You have to be the one that's creating the scintillating hypnosis of comparison within the context of your otherwise unbounded experience to create something that's either afflicting, non-afflicting, or neutral.
You have to create a person at odds with itself.
You must. Yeah, that's what happens. That aperture appears to create a persona at odds with itself. How did this happen? Now, our habit, maybe because of the way that we're conditioned, but even, you know, where does the conditioning come from? Again, you know, you can't find the usual suspects to blame anything on. Because there's no source condition. There's no storage barn where everything, you know, is dispatched from.
Dated and cataloged.
Yeah. And so it becomes impossible to say, I feel this way because you feel this way because humans are whatever humans are because galaxies and Higgs bosons and, you know, TV talking heads, rock stars are the way they are because, you know, because it's got a backbeat. So even the miraculous nature of your irrefutability, as in right now, right here, right this, does not have, is not the consequence of anything. You cannot find any reliable causative factors for you appearing in you. Some people might say, well, bullshit, man, you know, I was born, I have a body, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And yeah, that's cool. But if you look at these notions of born and body and the evidence that you might line up to suggest that you have every right to be you, if you look at it really carefully, if you are invited to look at it very carefully, because that part's not necessarily willful, but if you're invited to look at it carefully and something magical has said, hey, you better take another look at this, right? Because you're heading in a really shitty direction. Take another look. And if you do take another look, you'll begin to get a sense of, let's call it the frivolity of your own ideas, the frivolity of your own presentation.
Because it implies it leading somewhere that you know it's going to lead.
The frivolity of your own existence. I mean,
yes, it could go right there too, the frivolity of your own existence. Yeah.
It's confusing.
It starts there. It gets worse.
It starts with confusion.
Mm-hmm.
There's just such huge gaps and chunks in everything. If you're really honest, you're like, I can't even recall an entire period of, like, how important could it be if I can't even conjure up one good distinct memory from, you know, large
that's why,
chunks.
That's why the discovery of all of these micro galaxies.
I don't think it's true, though.
The discovery of, you know, the Milky Way and perhaps other places being surrounded or punctuated with micro galaxies that, you know, don't appear, are not easy to find in the so-called normal way that the skies are scanned. But now it's like, oh my God, we had no idea that we were more or less in a giant litter field of micro galaxies, you know? And that has something, the segue there is something having to do with the improved viability of dark matter. And that speaks to what you were suggesting, which is most of your so-called consciousness is dark matter, never to be recalled ever again.
And who gives a shit anyway?
That's a good point.
You start to really get like unbothered.
Yeah. Yes. So in order to dig your heels in and insist on disappointment or something as foolish as unenlightenment or the hopefulness of someday that your ship will come in is depth of field. It's nothing. Why we rely on some kind of behavioral or experiential or radiant or cathartic evidence so that we can frame ourselves as enlightened is insane. But the seeker's dilemma is that.
It's a habit. I mean, that's the way we live our lives.
Yes. You know, I had this experience, that experience. I mean, I could go through the book that someone else wrote about all the things that happened to them, and I could go check, 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 check. I've had every fucking great spiritual experience right here in this book. Check, 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 check. And I'm still an idiot.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
And this is happening right in the same room, cubicle even, as you are unmitigatedly and transcendently liberated. How the fuck did I figure out how to convince myself and therefore everybody else, I'm not enlightened yet, when all you are is unmitigatedly, transcendently, incomprehensibly gate-gate, para-fucking-gate, para-gate, bodhi-swaha.
Up your ass 24 hours a day.
Yep. So you can even look at the emphasis or the loyalty that I'm placing on objective or subjective experience to give me the goods so that I could finally go, oh, I'm good. I'm done. My work is done here.
Ooh, so ooh, 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 ooh.
Yeah.
Maybe that's sort of like a metaphor, the retirement, you know, kind of obsession. It's kind of funny, right? It's like you just want to retire. You like want to get to a point where everything's perfect and you can just retire.
Yeah, it's coming faster than you can. Yeah.
I find it's amazing that yesterday I had a day that like everything bothered me, you know, where it sounds and it was just an intensely fast day. And I felt like, you know, your picture with the puppet on the strings, like I had nothing to do with the speed that this day was going and how it was affecting me. And then today was like a normal day. The sounds are still there. You know, everything was probably still going the same way, but it just yesterday felt completely out of my control. And today it just felt normal, but I mean, it's just like pretty much you feel like you're just at the mercy of whatever the hell's going on until you stop yourself and go, I don't know, it's just like jumping off a train or something. But
jumping off a train.
Or in front of one.
Fast moving train.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, either one can work. Yeah, leap off the back of the caboose or, you know, jump in front of one.
But it makes me think sometimes, though, that Jeez. We have... That we're so a part of this weather system that some days
yes.
the system is going really fast and you're just
yes.
caught up in it.
Right.
And then you talk to other people and they're going, oh my God, crazy day, crazy, crazy day. You know, the next day is just normal. Yeah. You know, it's just fun.
Welcome.
Welcome.
I think it's beyond that. I really do.
There's pizza and there's dessert. Don't be shy about dessert. There's, we got coconut pie with raspberry filling.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And and strawberry rhubarb.
It's a special pie. It's not a filling, it's a feeling.
Strawberry rhubarb and coconut knock your teeth out pie.
With raspberry feeling.
Feeling with raspberry feeling. Sounds like a fortune cookie. Huh?
Friday, 3.1,
3.14.
Oh,
right.
You know,
it was
the 14th. Do we hit it yet?
No, that's Saturday. So we'll just celebrate that now. Throw it in with Jeff's birthday.
And Jane's birthday is today.
No.
We just came from dinner.
Nice. Yeah,
it's wonderful.
Oh, Pi Day.
Yeah.
I see.
314. When you get down to the moment.
I see.
You can't parse any further.
Right, like the Planck's constant. Anything smaller than the Planck's constant.
There it went.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Not, you can't even savor it, can you?
We were supposed to kiss.
Oops. Yeah. This is another fun, you know, glimpse. We want to savor, call it what our experience is, in a certain way. We might use the words joy, or compassion or sanguinity, equanimity, right? You can use Buddhist terms, Pali terms, Sanskrit terms, Christian. I mean, there's a bunch of terms of all the shit that's out there that would certainly be enviable. And that's one way that we impose upon the miraculous nature of our present experience to like say, well, am I happy? Am I okay? Right? So we're rendering all the time. That this is so, we ignore with aplomb. And then we go on a bender to make sure that this feels a certain way that's ultimately agreeable to me. And if it stacks up correctly, and I've read Ramakrishna or Eckhart Tolle, if it stacks up correctly, bada bada boom, bing blam bang, I'll be, right, fully baked.
It's a good day.
Bada bing, bada boom, forget about it. Yeah. And this...
Wait. 1, 2,
You're gonna sing happy birthday?
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, so
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jeffrey.
Nice guy, Sonda guy. Yeah, right.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And many more.
There we go.
Cha cha cha.
All right, have some here. Have some coconut pie. Yeah, no, well, anything you want. I'll just talk amongst yourselves. Peter Brown has the good sense to take breaks. We just keep rolling until everyone falls over and runs out of the room. That's enough, man.
Stop really enough. Talking.
Stop fucking talking. Yeah, really. Yeah, you made a few good points, but I am so out of here.
Yeah, I see what you mean now, but like...
Yeah, really.
I've worked more.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun, but I have to go to work.
I'm going to wait till the crowd dies down.
Yes.
I was just trying to recollect. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so then you have your good set of day, Eckhart Tolle, and your readings or whatever.
Well, like, how do you tell yourself how you're doing? What evidence and what authority do you use, right?
Better today than yesterday.
What's that?
Better today than yesterday.
Yeah, and what are the signs?
Well, you know,
it's an arbitrary random shit that you come up with from moment to moment.
No, but to me, it's very basic. It's like, what am I hung on, hanging up on? You know, what am I clinging to? What are the obsessiveness thoughts? And
right.
You know, the more I'm doing that, the happier I am.
That's right, because you want, not just you, but this, right? We're all, you know, card carrying. We want to feel a certain way about the nature of our present experience. So if I'm in an obsessive bender, right, I'm biologically agitated, psychologically agitated, emotionally agitated, dare we say spiritually agitated, whatever that might mean, right? And we're like, this doesn't feel good. Right? I don't feel good. Now, it's not the same as having a stomach flu. It's, you know, it's a very weird set of symptoms that you have when you're out of sorts, when you're impatient, when you're frightened, when you're apprehensive, when you're moody, when you're hypersensitive to, you know, sensory data that just should all go fuck off. Right? And so we might characterize some kind of spiritual progress. In what way? What do you expect to feel when your enlightenment ship comes in? What?
So fucking peaceful, man.
Okay. I mean, that's one, but that's not just it, right? Even that's not enough, is it?
No, then you get bored, and you're like, well, this is good.
And, then you have that.
You get bored.
Then you have that, yeah.
You get bored.
So even the even the most well-considered battery of symptoms that I want to have from enlightenment changes from day to day, from moment to moment. And it's all based on projection.
Well, random shit that you seem to encounter in a day and whatever, you know. Can't really say what it's based on.
Well,
but
the projection, I feel like, is like also based on like separation of everything.
Well, the projection is a symptom of the same kind of condensation of myth.
Oh man, at least there's like nuts in there.
Don't throw it out.
Oh, we saved it.
Just count to three and make sure it's up off the floor by then.
Dave, do you want to lick the rug over here, or should we clean that part up? I mean, are you channeling Daisy right now?
I'd love to channel Daisy right now.
You might want to try it. You never know.
My glasses. Oh, here's
the fork.
I was like, where's my fork?
Lower to the ground.
It's easy to get distracted around these parts.
Sorry, go, Bob.
Yeah. Sugar is how many more times addicting than cocaine? Many more times. To have any confidence at all in how you take yourself to be is to create the myth of a durable self in the midst of all of this miraculous evidence that reveals to you that you're a weather system.
A whose system?
Weather system. The interest in peace, in joy, in equanimous hippopotami is mistaking yourself as a character of some respectable durability. And that's how we fetishize enlightenment. Because it's going to look a certain way and feel a certain way that satisfies my present or subtle or illustrious expectations for the get-go, for the long haul. I will be unperturbable, invulnerable, prescient, have visions of past lives, peer through everyone's karma with no effort, right? Be a fantastic therapist, a fantastic healer, be sought after, recognized, maybe walk on water or be able to drink a lot of wine without falling down, right? And that's what it's going to look like when my shit comes in, you see? But all of that is being imposed upon, frivolously, trivially imposed upon, that you're already unencumberedly awake.
Right. There is like in a way of like, yeah, maybe someday is like the answer to most people's thing.
All of the appointment making and all of the wealth and security accumulation.
Or if I just said, the accumulation.
Is to satisfy an imaginary someday.
Mm-hmm. It's brutal, man.
It's fucking brutal. Yeah, thank you. Yes, it's absolutely brutal. Yeah. Oh, good. Cake with raspberry feeling.
They're little pieces. I didn't know.
It does feel like raspberry.
It's hard for you to not talk long enough to eat it, so I didn't want to overwhelm you too much.
I know.
Should have made a cake smoothie. What do you think?
Should have had a smoothie with a straw.
Just a straw.
No. I'll just put it under my armpit. I think I can simulate it that way. You can observe the force of, let's call it, the dual myths of objectification and subjectification. You can feel it. Here it is. This is you. The force. I mean, it truly is a force. I mean, Castaneda had a fun part, which was hardly ever emphasized, but in his, you know, shaman's realm, in his Toltec realm, they called it the rolling force. And the description of it is, I mean, it's just fascinating, but it was like, think of ocean tides, you know, that could topple giant steamships rolling into your abdomen nonstop. The rolling force. This incredible, you know, psychic and sub or super psychic pressure.
It's like a kundalini.
Sure. You know, you can go to all of these various physiologies and you'll find, right, really curious alignments, curious metaphors. Here you are. Unmitigated force of nature. An incredibly sensitive, miraculously appearing weather system of adroit sensitivity and the fascinating capacity to conjure virtual worlds. And don't ask me why that's not enough.
That is the question.
How does this wonder field of unmitigated liberation? I mean, even liberation has no dibs on this. Even to aim for something as trivial as liberation, because you read about Ramana Maharshi in a comic book,
so boring.
Is nothing. I mean, even to want to be, you know, like Byron Katie is nothing. Because all of the behavioral demonstrations of responsible and lovable and enviable enlightened persons is nothing. Your grandeur, your mysterious weather system trumps everyone and everything that's ever been. Just does. That this is capable of fooling itself with typically unexamined chutzpah.
Trivial pursuits.
Not only trivial pursuits, but like, you know, like your set of like rules or your set of like, you know, what you're capable of, or like just not admitting your like your own freedom like right now in a place versus like the striving and the set of rules that you feel like you're going to acquire from the ones you have now. You know, it's very confusing.
Well, the disconcerting thing, sorry, you know, though, it seems to me, is when somehow you've the distractions fall away, and there's this moment of whatever, you know, like true expansion.
True expansion.
And that, for the rest of your life, you have that in memory. You have this black hole in memory somehow, and then you're striving, you know. And it's kind of disconcerting because, you know, you can strive and strive. It seems like the
trivial pursuits.
You know.
Yes, no matter what.
Yes. That's why it could come in handy to, let's say, align yourself with one or several bodies of teaching or subtlety that assist you in the unwinding, right? Of the fixity of trying to repeat an enviable spiritual experience.
So smoking dope isn't the answer.
No, that's the answer. No, I was trying to see. I was almost there. I was getting there.
Yeah, where's the dessert after the dessert?
Really?
It's the after party.
No, that's what I, you know, pizza, cake, puffy. That's perfect. All problems go away. But you see, even the motive and agenda to be a problem ameliorator tethers you, right, to the notion of a humanness or a biocentricity that has become so annoying to you that you have to remedy it. Now your imagination has failed. Because instead of being absolutely off the charts, you're still on the charts. Because you want something to be remedied. You're still on the charts. And you'll notice that you make progress and you fail. You make progress and you fail. Shit that used to work for you sucks. You lose interest in it. You have to sneak up on... You must. You must sneak up on the genesis of adhesion here. Once you're in the loop as a product of mentation, as a product of objectivity or subjectivity, then you're embroiled in the symptoms of the universe that you've created and trying to navigate what's unpleasant or insufficient about it. And how long will you remain there? Till the fucking grave, and perhaps longer, depending on how many reincarnation cycles you've signed up for. Right? You're not going to unwind the myth of self by complaining or aspiring, because you're still on the charts. You want to get off the fucking chart. Thankfully, not just because there's pie, but thankfully, you are already in possession of the magical skill sets needed to sneak up on this and see through the myth of objectivity and subjectivity. And you don't have to wait around and be a beggar or a pacifist or a complainer as to why you're not enlightened yet, because that's crap. And if you've ever talked to yourself or someone else that's complaining about why they're not enlightened yet, they're really hard to talk down, right? Because the force and conviction of being insufficient is so profound that it's hard to like get them underneath the myth and say, okay, yes. I mean, you know, for a month you have to go yes, until they exhaust all of the inventory they've got as to how they justify, one justifies why I'm not the best I could possibly be. It's like, oh my God, how does she do it? Oh my God. And if you offer a clever retort for any one of those things and they like pause for a moment, it'll just keep coming at you. So, you know, we could say that tenacity, temerity and tenacity of egoic enterprise of universe creation is unstoppable. You can't outwit it. I mean, you can do a 40-day fast and get really, really high or whatever, but it's, you know, it's like just always there. So that's why you have to sneak up on, you have to pounce. Everybody, it's like the Wolverines.
No, thinking, you have to be a Wolverine. Tiny kitty cat.
Me too.
Kind of, yeah.
You didn't think Wolverine there.
You have to be a Wolverine for the truth.
It was more kitty cat.
Kitty cat.
Yes.
you can sneak up on yourself and see, feel, touch, whatever tactile, you know, phrase comes to mind, that your immediacy is unencumbered. Now your loyalty shifts. As you see that your immediacy is unencumbered, you hang there. You notice it. You feel it. It has a signature, and you return to it.
It doesn't suck.
And that's one reason we remember it so well, because it doesn't suck.
I mean, how long can it possibly last?
Yeah.
Not very long, I'm afraid.
Well, this is interesting. You are never not this unencumbered immediacy. So it's not a question of it lasting. Lasting means you're back on the charts.
Yeah.
Right?
That means
you've given yourself one star.
You're missing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's
you're
like
back on the charts.
Those little stars
of,
get stickers.
Of space, time, and inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Today,
yes.
One star at school, and tomorrow you'll get two. Today, you were really good, get four.
Yeah. This is how quickly and adroitly consciousness objectifies and subjectifies itself and creates, right, the hallucination of continuity, of the viability of the universe as being created. Let's say, you know, in your holographic fractalization. From what? But as a weather system that has no destination and no quarrel and, you know, moves with whatever impulses seem to be, right, in the weather system, you don't take yourself prisoner. And that's whatever nonstop suggests. Presence is never takes itself prisoner. Mind, thought, rumination, identification, egoic enterprise is, you could say, the symptoms of this taking itself hostage, taking itself prisoner, which it does very well, with no quarrel, with no hesitation. With not even a genuine consequence, except for what we call my suffering. Except just for that little trivial problem. Yeah. But even if you look at, quote, your suffering, show me your suffering. What the fuck inventory do you have? I mean, even in the midst of suffering, you're not really suffering. Even in the midst of profound, tragic, overwhelmed threat to self, threat to reputation, threat to limb, threat to continuity, right? On an iron lung because you can't fucking breathe anymore by yourself. You're such a nitwit, right? What? You're never not a transcendent weather pattern.
I think that message would be more popular. It's sort of funny.
Yeah.
How angry someone can get when you tell them. Yeah. You're just transcendental perfection.
That's the way to break through, right? Tell them about that. You're not really angry.
You know,
well, but there's nothing wrong with being angry. You see, that's another.
Thank goodness
for
that.
That's part
of
the weather system.
The language we use, you know, may be provocative, clumsy. Sometimes it hits the nail on the head. Most of the times it doesn't. You know, it may appear as if there's a, you know, a body of teaching or a certain kind of thing being expressed, but there's not. Because this, as in you, are not taking yourself prisoner. How could you possibly benefit from a teaching, from a, you know, some kind of causal certainty? How could you benefit from it? You can't. It's just more hysteria, discardable hysteria. Everything that's appearing in your experience is more or less discardable hysteria. You want to get all fucked up over it? Knock yourself out. Ride 'em, cowboy. Everything appearing in your experience, dare I say, everything is discardable hysteria. But you see how easy it is to write, to pick it up, spoon it into your takeout container, right? Weigh it, make sure it's, you know, shake it, make sure the contents are still in there, right? In other words, make the beauty of your present experience about discardable hysteria.
Instead of like investment and adornment, which is tends to be more where we.
Yeah.
Make everything in your present experience discardable hysteria.
That's what you do to be a suffering muggle. You become absolutely loyal to, convinced of, defending of discardable hysteria.
Because you own it. All of a sudden. And you're like, yo, that shit was expensive.
Okay, you're invested in it. Yeah. Seriously invested.
And it seems a lot of even the theory of karma there, you know, for a while, I could see that, you know, like, as you put out, it's like you're setting waves in motion.
Yeah.
And then they hit a point, and then they kind of start coming back to you, you know. Mm. So I could always see that. But then it's like, well, you can transmute your karma. You can do this. Or it's like, tricks. Wait a minute. So really any of these things can be changed, and it's doesn't seem to be any one truth in any of it.
It's a million frameworks, you know.
Yeah.
I say go for the karmic colon cleanse.
Colon cleanse?
Grab a toothbrush, one change of underwear, hit the Greyhound station, and diss a fucking pier.
That's us debating that.
I mean, you know, you can come back.
It'd be so easy.
Call an enlightened.
You can kind of do that in the middle.
Man, how come you're not coming in today? I'm enlightened. Oh, okay. We'll mark it down with human resources. Unpaid, paid or unpaid leave. Personal enlightenment day.
You're enlightened and retire in your lovely little home. Just do it. Just say, okay. I did it. Cha-ching, done.
You're not, one is not in control of the magnetism that draws you into revelation. Most primates, some of my best friends are primates, have absolutely no interest, no vocabulary, no sensitivity. This kind of conversation and the weird shit that it alludes to is not on their experiential life radar at all.
Tell us about
it. At all. For me, it's like, this just shit pours into my head all day long. Well, what about this? And go figure. If there's a worthwhile or constructive emphasis to be placed, it, you could say, always returns to this suggestion about feel, right? Feel the texture of present experience. Once you start thinking about yourself, how you think you're feeling, how you think you want to feel, what's in the way and what needs to be done about you, then, right, your attention has become hysterical, anecdotal, hypothetical,
fixing,
unreal. How might you, let's use the word harness or yoke or engage, the elasticity of your present experience, the expressive, radiant elasticity and fascination of your present experience, and feel yourself? Right? It's like, how could you harmonize with that lovely Gaic Hertz vibration? I don't know, what is it, 3 point something?
7.83
Hertz on your radio is like, you know, the vibratory hum of the Gaic field. And if you were a dowser and you could tune your own inner radio to the signature hum of the Gaic field, you're going to feel differently. And you can also attenuate your sensitivity to a friend, to a tree, to a book, to a poem, to experiencing itself, to a planet, to a galaxy, if you can see one. Right? Because you're a weather system. And you are everything that is, not just, right, a flesh sheathed bioluminous particularity walking on the surface of Earth like a little maggot with attitude. Right? You're that too. You're that too. But not, well, let's just say not just that. And your sensitivity is way broader and more fascinating and fantastic than what we call the symptomatic movement of mind, of thought, of opinion, of mood. You have to be tricked. We're tricked. If consciousness is doing such a great job of tricking us into the maladaptive harmonic of being a separative entity, and clearly it's doing that, consciousness will also have to trick you into revealing to you that you're not what you thought you were by virtue of the trick it played on you a day ago. Yeah. You have to be tricked into weaning yourself from loyalty placed in space-time as a disparate entity. You have to be fooled. So you pick up the scent, the tone of your transcendent nature. And it speaks to you. And you're like, whoa, that's me too? Yeah, that's you too. Thanks, dude. Nice. And the inertial force of returning to disquietude, returning to, you know, temporal egoic presentation, is formidable. Okay. But the tractor beam of transcendence is, some might say, as powerful, probably more powerful. So as remarkable it is as it is that one can be fooled into individuation, it's more powerful once it kicks into gear that you can be unfooled. Why it's not more common, you know, fuck me, I don't know. The Buddha said there's a bunch of imponderables. You want to ask those questions, it'll drive you mad, right? And we could say, why is it not more common amongst we plebeian primates that an interest in expansivity and an interest in transcendent possibilities is not more common? I don't know. Well, someone could say it's as rampant as anything. It just expresses weirdly the way that expresses, you know, across 7-point-something billion, call them souls. I don't know.
I can imagine a whole bunch of, you know, anthropologic explanations.
Yes. Yeah, and any or all of those anthropologic or sociologic, right, inferences all will point back to the very bizarre free-wheeling consciousness, the hard problem.
A unicity.
Yeah.
What city?
A unicity.
Any questions?
Oh, is this Q&A time?
No, there's time. There's more time.
Oh, will you do your kitty cat impression again?
Sure. The pouncing cat of, like,
do that again.
Pouncing cat of liberation?
He just wanted to fierce pouncing kitty cat.
He's a noble lion.
You can notice how you engage the movement of thought, the movement of mind, the movement of rumination and comparison to report to yourself how you're doing, and then give you apparent opportunities for how what you should do next.
Right? And I was like, oh shit.
Now, as you notice, turning to mind for justification, explanation, what to do next, how I'm feeling, how I want to be feeling, why I'm not feeling the way I want to be feeling, and whose fucking fault is it? You can lay all that down. How long does it take? It doesn't. It's instantaneous. Time does not elapse. When you lay down discardable hysteria, if it feels like it's taking time, that's because you're still on the charts. If you're frustrated by this not responding to you quickly enough, that could be a reminder that you're still on the charts.
I was thinking about that the other day for some reason, like how we, you know, you take like a quality like patience and you try to idealize it in some way instead of seeing the underlying thing is what you're saying is like, just get off the charts.
Yes.
You don't need to cultivate fucking patience.
Right.
Because that's all make-believe.
Yeah.
Ridiculousness.
Cultivation is for poser Buddhists.
Cultivation is for poser Buddhists.
You get rid of the black-white preference thing and you just are an idiot. There's all that categorization in it.
When you're capable, meaning it's been revealed to you and you've returned to it voluntarily or otherwise, you can begin to see that the release of all categorization is an atemporal non-event. You don't have to justify, negotiate, with yourself.
It's not even release, it's you're outside of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, release is kind of a measure of time. Release would suggest a measure of self and a measure of time.
Not investment. Just it doesn't matter.
It's stranger than being able to opine upon it with, you know, human characterization. Because if you're opining upon your transcendent nature through the lens of human characterization, uh-huh. you're still on the charts.
Uh-huh. It's as important as, like, it's the same level of investment as when you're watching it. Why would you care? Really, truly care what happens to this character. You start to step away as if you're just watching it.
Well, how about leave yourself out of it completely?
That's that. There's just less self.
Zippity doodah would be better than less. I mean, why aim for a baker's dozen when you can walk out of the donut shop with nothing? You see, you cannot characterize the transcendent radiance of your present irrefutability. You can't. I'm not singling you out. No one can. That's the recognition of your non-dual intelligence. The instantaneity, the atemporal and non-local recognition of your irrefutability does not occupy space, time, or explanation, does not see itself through the filtration system of human characterization. That's how intelligent you are. That's how intelligent this is. And if you get a glimpse of this, if you get a feeling of it, if you sniff it out, you can see for yourself that it's not operating in time. That this intelligence is not the consequence of a good meditation or a kale smoothie. You begin to feel yourself as this intelligence. A little bit in the beginning, right? You get a hint, you get a taste, you get a pull, you get a tickle, you're seduced.
And then that may be preceded by a half an hour of chanting or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sanskrit chanted, right? Right? Is slamming the pituitary gland deliberately to release what that gland is capable of releasing so that you become stoned, physiologically stoned, biologically stoned, transcendentally stoned. These language tools and yogic tools and chanting tools and pranayama tools, right, are working with the remarkable, resplendent brilliance of the endocrine system to conjure state changes. You know, in India, the yogis will cut the under part of the tongue with a reed slowly over time. You know, a little bit at time so that that releases and releases so they can take their tongue and go way back and tickle that pituitary gland. It's kind of a self-fellating, gesture. Yeah. Roll it right back, tickle right there at the cella turcica where the pituitary gland sits between the sphenobasilar synchondrosis and gets milked by the ebb and flow of cerebrospinal fluid. And they just go whoop, 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 it's like, see ya. Who knows? It has some utility. Cut your tongue and check it out. Or not.
A great invitation.
Let's tickle more.
The emphasis of having these kinds of conversations, the value of the repetitive nature of these kinds of conversations, is to have direct encounter with your resplendent non-dual intelligence and feel it and recognize it, get the signature of it, become more relaxed and more confident that the obliteration of discardable hysteria is okay by you. You'd think that the liberation from discardable hysteria would be on everyone's bucket list, but it's not. So that's why you have to be tricked, seduced, cajoled, eased into it, so that you can discover your inexplicable transcendence. Let's say in an environment that, you know, is friendly and honors that as one of a million human pastimes. Yeah. Now, you might notice that your confidence and your vocabulary can shift a little bit from being argumentative or clever, right, to, I don't really know anything at all. You rest in this, you know, village idiot bliss. I don't know anything at all. And everyone can be having their political conversations and their vaccination conversations and their GOP conversations and their chemtrail conversations and, you know, high-powered sonar killing whales and dolphins and all the wicked, horrible fucking things that idiot primates do with, you know, absurd machinery. Right. But amidst all of the tragedy, all the grim tragedy that primates are so capable of meting upon each other and all of the innocent creatures of the great oceans, there is still this absolute transcendence.
Presentness, I guess. Whatever you want it to be, but you guess it's a presence.
You know it with absolute integrity without having to have a single parcel of vocabulary to justify it.
Well, what were we saying earlier about tying together distant location? What the hell was it again?
I don't know.
Those two things.
Run the playback. First down.
Non-local, something or other?
No.
Action at a distance?
No. forget it. Well, you can't get the two at the same time, like we were saying. You know, you can't observe. Yeah.
The Heidenberg.
And measured at the same time. So that's kind of like time, like in any instant, that's occurring.
Heidenberg uncertainty.
You can drop out principle. Time in a second because it's never really been tied together.
No.
That's just fabricated.
Yes. Right.
So you have to tie it together to be able to say, to do all that stuff that you're yes. kind of talking about.
Yes. Here's a very simple experiment. Here you are. Stay the same.
Okay, wait a minute, I'm trying.
Freeze your present.
You can get very, very still. So you're in a still room. And then it's still room.
I can get stiller. I can get stiller if I do this. Oh, wait, my shoulder's not still. Wait.
How far do you have to go to simply cope.
Slow your heart rate to just about death, but not quite.
Cope with the evidence of your present so-called experience and observe in an absolutely secular manner that this doesn't stay still, nor does it linger long.
So you don't really have to escape from anything, which a lot of times it seems like that's spend most of our time trying to escape from an imaginary ghost.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yes. The incarceration or lamentation or regret or insufficiency are the, you could say, the byproducts of imagining that you can occupy this present moment.
Even like, I just, like, meditation popped into my head for some reason as being a, like, sort of escapism kind of, not that it has to be, but can be used that way.
Yeah. It's a lovely thing to occupy your own present autonomy and be absolutely unburdened by discardable hysteria. And there's no negotiation. There's no justification. There's no glorious kumbaya that wants to stitch it all together as we are one.
Consider he is one. I would be interested in that.
Was that the 7 o'clock ferry or something coming into port?
You were talking about.
Really?
It's the Schumann resonance.
Wow. Home can really tickle your sphincter, can it?
And now for the after party.
What is it?
I don't.
He's a real fan of yours.
I don't know what device that is. It's, I don't know.
It's a fan.
Oh, it's bad bearings on the bathroom fan.
Just a cheap ass fan.
Do something about it. Cheap ass. That's what we are. Just cheap ass humans. Crappy bearings. Poor wiring. We expect to have a high quality experience from the likes of this.
It just seems that the more that you let go of fixed, you know, static, the better off you are. You know, just everything is temporary, you know, it's just fleeting at every minute.
It clearly is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's whatever it is that just makes us want things to stay the same. It's just so much of the population. Like, I don't know what percentage of people can let go of that thought. I mean, it's,
yeah.
We're there. Most of us are.
Well, whose life are you most interested in? Other people? With respect to the blissful possibility of this letting go. Do you really give a shit that anybody else but you lets go or not?
Well, no, you were just saying about other people you work with and, you know, like people that you interact with.
Yes.
There's not a lot of people that, you know, most people you interact with want things to stay the same and just have visions of what things should be and visions of who people are. And it's just it's the not letting go and you know, letting things be.
It's weirder than
letting
go and letting be. Because you, not to single you out, no one possesses any agency to begin with. There is none. You can still do this when you feel like it, or get another slice of pie if you feel like it, but you're not in possession of agency. And nothing has ever sufficiently held you captive to bother letting go of it. You feeling the instantaneity of the absolute collapse of, right, ideation? Yeah. That's the, right, That's the texture. That's the ambient feeling. Is that as you become more adroitly acquainted with your mind, your own mind's capacity for imagining circumstances and events and time space, you can say, "No, no thanks." And here you are again, absolutely released, not that you were ever incarcerated, from the imagination that something could possibly exist that you would even need to have an opinion about it. Mm-hmm. How free do you want to be? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.